Welcome to Double X Science. Science, I'm just that into you.
Today is Friday, March 15th, 2013. I am Adrian Rorick, chemistry editor, and with me today is Emily Willingham, editor-in-chief of Double X Science. Hi, Emily.
Hey, Adrian. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Today, for our listeners, why do you write about science?
I write about science because I have been writing pretty much my entire life, and it's something that I do compulsively, and I've always liked science, and it's been a dream since I was probably about 7 or 8 years old to be able to combine the two of them. And so I get to do that pretty much on a daily basis, which is fantastic. Adrian, why do you write about science?
Well, much of the same reasons you do. I have been writing since I learned to write. I have a drawer somewhere full of all the writing I did as a child and all the stories I wrote. And I fell in love with science about middle school. And over the years, I did some journalism classes in high school and college. As my career has grown and whatnot, I've just been combining these two loves of mine, the science and the writing. So that's why I write about science.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think we're all driven to it by those dual compulsions, right? The interest in science and the desire to write about things and tell stories about them and stuff.
Exactly. Now on to our week of posts. This week, we had 5 posts.
On Monday, on Double X Science, we ran a post that we felt was quite important from contributor Laura Newman, who blogs at Patient Point of View. And she describes the current situation about HIV-positive mothers, women who become pregnant while they're HIV-positive. And what motivated the story, you might have read about this earlier, I think last week, was the report of a case study out of Mississippi of a woman who had been pregnant, delivered a child. The woman went without any kind of prenatal treatment for HIV. At all, and they instituted therapy in the infant within 30 hours of birth, which is not the usual protocol for doing ART therapy in children. And apparently, so far at least, the therapy that they introduced for the child seems to have cleared the virus completely. There's no sign of the virus in the infant at all, and so they're calling it a cure, at least in this particular child. Now, that doesn't mean that there's going to be some sort of worldwide cure for even for infants if they institute this therapy within 30 hours of birth. And Laura's point in her post was that actually you can reduce transmission rates almost to zero with appropriate prenatal care for the woman during the pregnancy. And that when that is in place, the transmission rates are extremely low from mother to infant. And so that's part of the core of her post and just educating people about the getting the testing, getting the prevention of transmission therapies during pregnancy. Right. So it's a pretty interesting post, and I totally recommend that everybody go read it because there might be some things in there that surprise you.
I agree. This is a not well understood area of health by the general public. And I think that there's a lot of education that goes on in this post. I learned quite a bit myself. And I also chatted with Laura a little bit this week. It was very enlightening for me.
Yeah, there's a lot in here that I don't think people realize about HIV and pregnancy, certainly. So we're glad Laura did that for us.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Now, here's a snippet of my conversation with Laura Newman about the post.
I do think that this is an area that's incredibly poorly understood.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Like I say in the story, since the Magic Johnson thing happened and then he looked so hale and hearty, everybody kind of, in their minds, HIV is not an issue.
For the full conversation in the feed later this week.
And on Tuesday, we had a post called With Height, We Get What We Want by Double X Science contributor Elizabeth Preston. And in this post, Elizabeth was analyzing the methods and results from a research paper called Are Human Mating Preferences with Respect to Height Reflected in Actual Pairings that appeared in PLOS One, which is a peer-reviewed journal. And she does an excellent job going through the methods of the study and the results of the study in a very accessible way. And essentially, the results are more or less what you would expect in sort of a very specific subculture of heterosexual and European people, where in general males are expected to be taller than females, but there's also a range that people don't want a partner that is too much taller, too much shorter than them.
Yeah, we were glad to have that acquisition from Elizabeth. She's an editor at Muse, which is a science magazine that's oriented toward girls, actually, towards tween girls as the audience for Muse. And we had a great post on Wednesday, and it was great because it actually featured two people who just recently were involved in an interesting Twitter exchange with no less than Jose Canseco about gravity and the time of the dinosaurs. And the person who was best equipped to talk to Mr. Canseco on Twitter about gravity was our own physics editor, Matthew Francis, and the person who was best equipped to come in and talk with Mr. Canseco about the time of the dinosaurs was Brian Switek, who actually focuses on paleontology in his writings, and he has a new book out, My Beloved Brontosaurus. Matthew took the time to read the book, which I understand, Adrian, you're also reading, and it's a fantastic book. And he has put up a review of My Beloved Brontosaurus, and that appeared on Double X Science on Wednesday. You may have already listened to our previous podcast with Matthew, but if you haven't, do take a listen to it. That was our podcast on February the 18th. It's called Protons, Procrastination, and Cosmic Rays. And you can listen to Matthew talk there about his own wheelhouse of physics. But also do take a look at the review of Brian Switek's My Beloved Brontosaurus.
Its expected publication date is April 16th, 2013, so be sure to look for that on your science shelves in your favorite bookstore, or go ahead and ask for it to be pre-ordered. On Thursday, we had a post that covered gluten sensitivity. What does it really mean? By Double X Science contributor Julianne Wyrick. This post discusses a recent experience of Julianne where she has had some health issues, and she went in for testing to see what that could be. And it turns out she does not have celiac disease, which is a disease that we've discussed 2 weeks ago on the podcast. But her doctor suggested that what she had instead was a gluten sensitivity, and to just remove gluten as much as possible from her diet. And she found that that did actually help. But because she has this interest in science, she looked into what does that really mean. While studies suggest that there is such a thing as gluten sensitivity, there's no real great science about how it works and what the true source of it is. And so it's a post that goes through quite a bit of the recent literature regarding gluten sensitivity. And any of our listeners who think that they may have a gluten sensitivity or celiac disease or a wheat allergy may want to read this post and, of course, consult with their healthcare professional about any issues they may have.
Yeah, definitely, because right now I think there's a lot of confusion about gluten and sensitivity versus allergy versus whether or not sensitivity is a real thing and what celiac is. And of course, it's kind of the dietary adjustment du jour to cut out gluten or to look for gluten-free products. It's useful to give some evidence-based information to people about what some of that stuff really means and how people respond to it and why. Friday, we ran our usual installment of our I Am mental illness series that we are running to try to destigmatize mental illness. This series includes stories and essays from people who live with mental illness themselves and what the reality of that life is like. We were glad today to be able to run two things as part of the series. One of them was a cartoon from Beatrice Biologist, who blogs at beatricebiologist.com. And the cartoon was making the point that when it comes to mental illness, people are very uncomfortable openly discussing that with other people. They'll talk about any other kind of bodily disorder or disease, from vomiting to breaking their leg to, you know, gross cuts and bruises on your head and things like that. But when it comes to mental illness, people are far more reluctant to talk about it, in part because of the stigma associated with it. And we thought that it would be a great idea to couple that cartoon with a post by Adrian Jones that is called A Dislocation of Mind. And Adrian wrote this post for her own blog called No Points for Style. And in the post, she makes a really important point, this time from the perspective of the medical establishment, about how the medical establishment treats mental illness as a separate entity from any other kind of health disorder that we have. It's an incredibly well-made point and a very important post, and I urge everybody to go read it if you have not.
You can find all those posts at our website, doublexscience.org, by clicking on the links to the post title on the main page. In addition, our sister site, Double X Science Junior, had two posts this week. Tuesday was Don't Stop Playing, and Thursday was Rare Earth Metals, both by Future Science Leaders bloggers who have been contributing to our site for the school year.
Rare Earth Elements has proved to be very popular on the site. It has gotten a lot of interest from our various social media feeds. And so if you haven't had a chance to check out Double X Science Junior, that might be a good place to go in and start reading. And then you can just keep clicking through.
You can find these at doublexsciencejunior.blogspot.com or by following the link from the doublexscience.org main page. Now on to our news. Emily, what science news have you been reading this week?
Well, I had brought to my attention from several quarters this week a story that's out about a study using a drug that has been around for about a century to treat African sleeping sickness. Researchers have taken this drug and used it in what they call a mouse model of autism, or mice that show autism-like symptoms. And the report is that the drug does something to, quote-unquote, improve the symptoms in these mice that show autism-like symptoms. The study is from the University of California, San Diego, and it sounds like the study authors were trying to develop sort of almost a unified theory of autism or what causes it. They focus on metabolic disorders, and that just means how the body processes compounds and what happens to those compounds. And one of the things that's very involved in those kinds of disorders, or can be, is how mitochondria function. There probably is a subset of people with autism who do have some sort of mitochondrial dysfunction. That's a very promising area of research for autism. But the general consensus about autism is that there are many, many things that lead to this suite of behavioral signs and symptoms of what we think adds up to autism. In other words, there are probably a lot of different autisms, as some people say.
Right.
Mice don't actually have autism. There are people who created these different kinds of mice that show sort of behaviors that maybe they equate to autism, but autism is actually a social construct as much as anything else. And so it's kind of difficult to say, because the mice don't vocalize with each other as much, that's analogous or a proxy for autism. So that stuff's a little difficult. The bottom line is, it's a mouse study. Anything that is done in mice is light years away from ever entering a clinic and showing any kind of effectiveness in humans. There are thousands and thousands of drugs that even get as far as clinical studies and then don't make it past that point. And a very small percentage of drugs actually make it to the point of showing some kind of efficacy in humans, in a human population, and being approved by the FDA.
That wraps up our week at Double X Science. Next week we can expect more posts on Double X Science Junior by our Future Science Leaders contributors. What else are we expecting, Emily?
Well, we have a couple of things coming up next week. One of them has got to do with dental plaque, and if that sounds boring, you're just going to have to come and check it out. Jeffrey Perkel has something slightly more interesting to say about dental plaque than maybe what you've heard in the past. We also are expecting to put up a very cute post. It's going to be a series of photos of women who today are women, when they were girls. And so it's our Girls Who Became Scientists photo series, and we're expecting to put that up next week on Double X Science. And finally, just to kind of gross you out completely, I think we're going to be having a post from our health editor, Tara, about farting on airplanes. And that's something to look forward to as well.
Ooh, it sounds like a good portion might appeal to the child in you.
And of course, we will be running our usual installment of our I Am Mental Illness series on Friday.
All right. Well, thank you for listening. Please subscribe to our podcast via iTunes or your favorite podcatcher. Our music is provided by Editor-in-Chief Emily Willingham. Our artwork is by Dallas Lopez. Please like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at XXI. This has been Chemistry Editor Adrian Rorick and Editor-in-Chief Emily Willingham. We are Double X Science, bringing science to the women in you.